Senior Justice Millett will be the Chief Justice on this case. The appellant may proceed.
Thank you, may it please the court. I'm Fletcher Harcrater for the appellant Deborah Graves. I would request 3 minutes from time for rebuttal of my time.
All right.
Background case is it stems from a motor vehicle collision and personal injury of the appellant Deborah Graves on December 8th, 2015. The case was tried in the Albemarle Circuit Court in April of 2019 on the issue of damages only, since the defendant and appellee Shoemaker admitted fault before trial. Prior to the trial, the defendant and appellee Shoemaker took the video deposition of Shoemaker's medical expert witness, Dr. William Andrews, to present at trial. Trial court excluded the cross-examination by appellant Deborah Graves of Dr. Andrews as to his bias regarding payments of some $793,000 he received from Shoemaker's liability insurance carrier, State Farm, in the time period from 2012 through 2018. The trial court held that these payments did not demonstrate what the trial court referred to as a direct relationship between Dr. Andrews and State Farm, and it was therefore inadmissible. Dr. Andrews testified at trial that most of appellant Graves' medical bills of some $26,000 were not caused by the collision. Dr. Andrews was the only defense witness at trial, and the jury returned a verdict for $3,000. The trial court declined appellant Graves' motion for a new trial. Appellant Graves submits that the trial court committed error by excluding from trial a Graves cross-examination of defendant's medical expert, Dr. Andrews, concerning his bias in favor of the defendant and State Farm Insurance because of the substantial financial connection that was demonstrated in evidence between Dr. Andrews and defendant's liability insurer, State Farm. We say that there was error in this case on that basis for essentially three reasons. One, that the ruling was contrary to the Virginia Rules of Evidence. Two, that the ruling conflicts with the court's holding in Lombard versus Rohrabaugh that it's proper to allow cross-exam of medical expert witness on bias showing compensation by the defendant's liability insurance carrier where there's a substantial connection established. And three, that the trial court did not analyze the issue of whether or not to admit the proposed witness bias evidence in the context of Rule 2:403, which is the balancing of whether the probative value of the evidence outweighs the potential danger of any unfair prejudicial effect. So returning to my first point, the ruling was contrary to the Virginia Rules of Evidence. Rule 2:610, of course, provides that a witness may be impeached by showing that the witness is biased or prejudiced against the party, and extrinsic evidence of that bias or prejudice may be admitted at trial. Also, going along with that, Rule 2:411 provides that the evidence of insurance it does not have to be excluded from trial, not required when another purpose, such as bias or prejudice witness, which was in fact what the evidence was offered for in this case. And then, of course, Rule 2:402 provides that relevant evidence is admissible, and this was relevant evidence of bias of the defense medical expert. And so the decision by the trial court to exclude the evidence was contrary to those rules of evidence, and the trial court did not do any analysis of those rules in making her decision to exclude the evidence. Two, the ruling conflicts with this court's holding in Lombard versus Rohrabaugh, that it's proper to allow cross-examination of a defense medical expert and inject the issue of insurance in the case where there's a showing of a substantial connection between an insurance carrier and a witness in the case. In the Lombard case, of course,
counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. May I ask you this? So your substantial connection is this witness, according to your proffer in the deposition testimony, had received upwards of $800,000 from State Farm since 2012. Is that right?
That's correct.
And the trial court believed that that wasn't a substantial connection for purposes of bias impeachment, apparently.
The trial court didn't conduct that analysis. It bypassed that analysis completely and came up with a term of direct relationship that she applied to make a determination of whether the evidence should be admissible or not. She did not look at the evidence, and that's one of the problems with the decision in the case at the trial court level, that the substantial connection analysis not applied to the evidence in the case.
Apparently, that theory appeared to assume that defense counsel cut checks and pay paid experts. And was there any possible inference in the world that $800,000 came from defense counsel law firms as opposed to the underlying defendant and insurer of the defendant?
I don't believe so. There was no indication the defense counsel had paid any money. The defense counsel arrangement was, in this case, was to send an invoice or get an invoice from the doctor in question, and then the invoice was paid by State Farm, and that was the customary practice over some years of time that they had worked together. I think they indicated in deposition, Dr. Andrews indicated that he'd worked with Mr. Catano's office for 10 years or so, and that had been their arrangement. So would it
be even ethically proper for a lawyer, a litigator, to upfront and pay expert testimony fees with no expectation of all of it being reimbursed by the underlying client, and thus the lawyer become economically invested in the case?
Well, I'm not sure about that ethical question, Your Honor. That in medical cases and personal injury cases, there are attorneys sometimes have to pay upfront medical experts in order to obtain their testimony by deposition or trial. So that happens with some regularity. I'm not aware of any ethical conflict with that.
Isn't the expectation there that there would be reimbursement by the client?
Yes, certainly. Certainly.
And absent that expectation, the lawyer is actually becoming an economic participant in the litigation.
Certainly.
Okay.
That's correct. But back to the Lombard issue, the crux of the issue is whether there was evidence of a substantial connection, as was just had some discussion about, and that's the analysis that should have been applied from our appellant perspective in the case. As I said, the $793,000 over the time period of 2012 to 2018 was, from our perspective, a substantial connection between State Farm and Dr. Andrews, and that's the analysis that the trial court should have applied in this case. Instead, the trial court came up with an analysis of looking at whether there was a direct relationship or not, which was not defined by the trial court, but that's what she stated that she was applying to the evidence in this case, and so decided to not admit the evidence. Substantial connection concept and test is one that the majority of jurisdictions around the country apply. And if you don't have the direct relationship test that was applied by the trial court, certainly allows for some arrangements by defense medical doctors so that they can always avoid the substantial connection test analysis, I suppose. But the bias of Dr. Andrews was an appropriate thing for the jury to consider in this case. The jury had no opportunity to consider that evidence because the court excluded it completely, and it could have been provided for by the trial court with this is a damages only case, so it could have been provided by the trial court without undue harm to the process, without prejudice to the defendant by limiting instruction. Also, it was a damages only case, so it would not have had any impact on the liability determination in the case. And so that takes me to my third point. The trial court did not analyze whether or not to admit the proposed bias evidence in the context of Rule 2:403, which provides specifically for that balancing of the probative value of the evidence versus the danger of any prejudicial effect. And in the Lombard holding, this court says specifically that saying that testimony concerning liability insurance may be elicited for the purpose of showing bias and prejudice of a witness if there's a substantial connection between the witness and the liability carrier. And importantly, those are my words, if a substantial connection, this is the court's words, if a substantial connection is demonstrated, its probative value concerning potential bias or prejudice outweighs any prejudice to the defendant resulting from the jury's knowledge that the defendant carries liability insurance. So I think from that, it's clear that this court in the past has held that substantial connection is shown. The balancing is the appropriate value of that evidence outweighs any concern or potential problems with unfair prejudice to the defendant. And so in this case, the appellant said the trial court abused its discretion in not admitting relevant evidence. Based on the test for abuse of discretion, the court noted in the Primoff versus Serco case, which the test is that when a relevant factor is not considered, number one, number two, when an irrelevant or improper fact is considered and given significant weight, and number three, when a court considers all proper factors, it commits clear error in judgment in weighing the factors. In this case, the court violated number two, which is that it applied an improper factor and gave it significant weight rather than using the substantial connection test referred to in Lombard. The trial court created a test of her own as to whether that was a direct, in quotation marks, direct relationship between the witness Andrews and the insurer State Farm, and then found that there was not. So the trial court came up with an improper factor and gave it significant weight. Also, the trial court committed error and abuse of discretion by the fact that it did not analyze the evidence in the context of the Virginia evidence, as I've indicated already, and two, did not apply the law properly, did not apply the Lombard ruling properly to the case. And this was not harmless error because, as I mentioned, Dr. Andrews was the only defense witness at trial, and his credibility was linchpin of the defendant's case. So we would request that the court reverse the decision in this case and grant appellant a new trial with the opportunity to cross-examine the defense medical expert on the evidence of bias in favor of State Farm based on substantial financial connection with that company. I'm going to reserve my remaining 2 minutes if I may. Thank you.
All right. Appellee.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is John Catano, counsel for the defendant in this case, and a pleasure to appear before you all. I don't have a whole lot more to add to my argument other than as set forth in my brief, but I do want to emphasize a few things, and particularly with the court's ruling in Lombard versus Rohrbaugh, which, you know, it's the only really that's relevant, I believe, to this appeal, and written 19 years ago by then Justice Lemons, apparently. And in it, you all recognize, this court recognized, the longstanding, well-established rule that whether or not a defendant has or carries liability insurance is generally irrelevant and inadmissible in a case. Of course, the court goes on in that case, as Mr. Harkrader has been explaining, that if there are situations which the bias and prejudice of a witness might outweigh that general principle. I do want to talk a little bit about the Lombard case, but I sort of couch it in terms of when there is such a long-standing and established principle of keeping insurance out of a case, I feel like if there's going to be an exception to it, that as set forth, and rightfully so, I'm not arguing against Lombard at all. I mean, I think it's wonderfully, rightfully decided. But when there is such an exception set forth, I think the exception needs to be strictly construed and confined to the facts.
May I interrupt you there, counsel, for a second with this question?
Sure.
I thought the bias was in favor of evidence, and that the rules of evidence are meant to tell us where the limits are. But if the evidence is relevant and it's material, it should come in unless one of the rules of evidence says it shouldn't. So there, you know better than I do, bias is probably the most significant cross-examination topic in any trial. That's where the narrative comes from. It clearly is, as I say, with your experience, I know you know that. How could it not be relevant evidence that this doctor representing this defendant got almost $800,000 over the course of 6 years from State Farm? How can that possibly not be incredibly relevant bias testimony?
Well, the way you're framing the question, it would be impossible that it would not be incredibly relevant in order to show bias. However, this case is distinguished from the situation, I submit, that you are couching your question in. And that is this. You are presupposing in your question that the expert, Dr. Andrews, in this case, knew at all relevant times herein that State Farm was even involved in this case.
And there, so he got $800,000 from State Farm over the course of 6 years, and he's got another case, and cross-examination is not meant to do anything other than to probe something that you have a good faith basis to probe. So they wanted to ask that question, and the doctor says, well, I don't know who's paying me. And the cross-examination is, so you got $800,000 from State Farm and you don't know who's paying you? In this case, you don't know who's paying you? Isn't that the proper use of cross-examination to test the credibility with bias of the statements of a witness?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, you could to ask that question as you are doing with your questioning to me. If the doctor doesn't know, I mean, State Farm's not the only insurance carrier for whom he does business.
Finder doesn't have to believe the doctor. I know this is a harsh way to put the question, but in truth, the fact finder does not have to believe any witness in the case. So if the evidence says you brought in $800,000 over 6 years, which basically means you've got a particular market for your expertise, and you're claiming you have no idea that that could possibly be going on in this case, why couldn't a reasonable fact finder say, you know what, with all due respect, doctor, I'm having trouble believing that.
Okay, so am I understanding your question to mean that in any case, whether it's a State Farm insured or not, Dr. Andrews should be allowed to be cross-examined on the amount of money, $800,000, give or take, I guess, over the last 6-8 years, what it was, even as an insured of Nationwide or Farm Bureau or, Loudoun Mutual, some little insurance carrier that probably pays Dr. Andrews $1,000, you know, a year to do some work. I don't know. There's nothing to suggest in the case that State Farm was even involved.
Well, so let me ask you this then. Do you, under your understanding of trial court practice, would it be permissible for the plaintiff to say, doctor, the truth be told, you provide your expertise services to the civil defense bar almost exclusively, and that in the past 6 years you've gotten almost $800,000 from the civil defense bar without mentioning the insurance company at all? That you're telling me that would not be proper bias test of cross-examination?
No. Oh, absolutely, that is a perfect example of the manner in which to cross-examine the doctor under these circumstances. Yes. And by the way, Your Honor, Dr. Andrews, in the record, and the only evidence in the record is that Dr. Andrews does about 40% of his work for plaintiffs and 60% for the defense bar. But that is a question, and the question you raise is something that Mr. Harkrader never pursued in this case. He did not ask, and it would have been absolutely permissible. Dr. Andrews, you make $500,000 a year doing defense work. Isn't that true? And he'd say, well, I don't know if it's $500,000. It might be between $300,000-$400,000. But I mean, that is completely permissible. And every judge would always allows it. And this judge always, Judge Higgins, always allows that line of questioning. Mr. Harkrader did not pursue that line of questioning in this case. He was so focused on establishing himself, this substantial connection. He wanted to establish it when the threshold question of State Farm involvement in the case was not even satisfied, was not even raised. He is the one that raised it. Months and months later, when he was deposing Dr. Andrews, and Dr. Andrews said, well, yeah, now I know State Farm's involved. You're telling me right now. And it was like eight months later.
Counsel, why would the jury in a damages case not be able to say, I hear you, doctor, I respect you, but I think your recollection is less than persuasive. This is a State Farm case. In fact, you were hired under these circumstances. You got $800,000 in the last 6 years from State Farm. And I know you tell me you don't remember any time ever being told that you were being paid by State Farm in this case, but in all candor, the fact finder could say, you know, I'm not sure I agree with that. What's wrong with the fact finder having that information and making the call?
Well, I obviously, if that's the direction the court's going, then we will deal with it. But
no, I'm just asking the question. What's wrong with it? Forget what we may or may not do. What's wrong with the jury hearing obviously relevant evidence regarding bias?
Well, Your Honor, you are saying then that any State Farm insured defendant who would be in the similar situated then with the use of Dr. Andrews would be subject to that cross-examination even if he had no knowledge that State Farm was I'm not understanding the question.
He says he has no knowledge that this is not the next $5,000 on top of his $800,000. He said that. He flat out said that. And I'm not suggesting he's telling the truth or not telling the truth or anything in between. My only question is, shouldn't a jury be able to make that call? And to respond to your hypothetical, I'm not talking about liability cases. Obviously, the mention of insurance in a liability case is a completely different animal, as you know. But in a damages case, where the whole debate is really whether these injuries have any permanency at all?
I guess what I'm hearing from you is that, and it's hard for me to respond other than the response that in the case of Lombard, when you all decided that case, there was no question because it was in the record who engaged the Dr. Ammerman in Lombard. It was Allstate, and it says on page 3 or page 488 in the reporter, Allstate engaged the services of Bruce Ammerman.
So who engaged the services? Who engaged the services of your doctor in your case?
I did.
So you didn't do that as an agent for the client? You did it entirely for you and your law firm? You hired him and made a contract, and you weren't acting as an agent for your client and doing that?
Well, I was for an agent for my client, yeah.
Okay, so your principal hired the doctor.
Right, but I guess I don't mean to be arguing with you at all.
I want you to.
Okay. Well, in order to answer your question, you would have to assume that Dr. Andrews When I send him a case with a letter addressed, you know, from my law firm to him, and then he sends me a bill and he sends me a written report to me. He's not sending it to State Farm. He's not sending his bill to State Farm. It's going to me.
Do you think he expects you to pay it out of your law firm account, or does he expect the underlying insurance company to pay it?
If there is an underlying insurance company, he would expect the underlying insurance company to pay it. If it's an uninsured client, he would expect the uninsured client to pay it. Absolutely. He knows I'm not going to. Why would I? I'm not. I'm not going to foot that bill. But I guess my point is, how can there possibly be bias when someone is forming an opinion, as in this case, when the person forming the opinion has no idea who the insurance carrier was? It could have been Auto Owners Insurance Company, who has no substantial connection at all, you know, the amount of money involved. It could have been. But he doesn't know, and he doesn't care. So if retroactively, after someone forms an opinion, they find out, or it is established by the plaintiff's counsel, that, oh, there's a substantial connection there, and that's what Lombard says, so we're good to go. Well, you know, if you all think that's good to go, then that's fine. But at the time he formed his opinion, he did not know State Farm was involved in the case. And it's just a critical distinction from the Lombard case. But if, as I said, I don't know if you all want to expand Lombard or restrict it or modify it, whatever, that's fine. But
well, let me ask you a question, counsel. This is Justice Goodwin. I understand what you're saying. What we're trying to figure out is what should the rule be? Because in essence, what I think some of my colleagues are saying is that when there's this substantial amount of money that an expert has received from a particular insurance company, that in and of itself is sufficient to show a substantial connection between the insurance company and the expert, and something that should be brought out at trial. And of course, you can explain how it really works in insurance defense work, where he gets his money, he gets his cases from his lawyer, he doesn't get them from the insurance company, and he doesn't care who the insurance company is. Well, why wouldn't that all go to a jury and let the jury decide whether or not that's relevant?
Well, I guess it certainly could. And I am just distinguishing, I the way I'm reading Lombard is not what these questions that I'm hearing now is an expansion of Lombard. Because in Lombard, as I said, it was very clear the carrier engaged directly the expert. I think the critical inquiry and the threshold inquiry must be, at the time the doctor is forming and rendering his opinion, did he even know that there was an insurance carrier and which one was involved? Because a substantial connection can always be placed retroactively, but it's irrelevant if it is, because he didn't know it at the time he formed his opinion.
Counsel, it seems that your argument would be that the doctor absolutely has to know who the carrier is. Wouldn't it be sufficient to go before the jury for there to be an inference that if this doctor has done 30 to 35 cases for you over the last 10 years, has received $800,000 from the insured that you represent, wouldn't the jury be able to fairly assume that the doctor had a good idea of which insurance this was coming from, which carrier?
I guess that might be true if the only work I ever did was for State Farm and the only cases I ever sent him were from State Farm, but that's not the case.
But I don't think it would have to be the only in carrier that you represent or the only cases that you send, but with the number of cases, the amount of money, the time span, I think a reasonable jury could infer that the doctor might have a pretty good idea of where the money comes from. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. Rebuttal?
After hearing argument, Your Honor, I do do not have any rebuttal. I waive further rebuttal and argument unless the court has any questions of me.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. We'll be in touch with you soon.
Thank you.
You are free to go.